To a Friday morning edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. I'm your host, Gavin Shaw. Across the river is Alex Wolf, and we are breaking down another mailbag for you guys. Off-season edition, I think the first off-season mailbag we've ever done, so this is a seminal moment in our relationship moment, a seminal moment in the history of this podcast, and I'm excited to get into it.
Yep, and we're going to start by talking about how trading down from number two to get two first-rounders could potentially affect cap space for signing two max free agents for the Knicks. And then we will move on to the very, very important question of how many games in a season could 15 Mitchell Robinsons win if the Knicks had a team of 15 Mitchell Robinsons.
And finally, we will finish up talking what it would cost to move from picks 2, 3, 4, 5, one of them, wherever the Knicks end up, back to number one to take Zion Williamson, and what specific scenario that would be plausible in. All that and more next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knox foul from behind, counting at one. As Fisdale pumps his fist.
What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane to Trier. Trier drives down.
Becomes infectious.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. I'm Gavin Shaw. He's Alex Wolf. And let's get into it. First mailbag question comes from Russell Warshay at Russell Warshay on Twitter. He asks, how does trading down from number two to two first rounders in this draft affect the cap space for signing two max free agents? So, Alex, you're normally the cap guy, so I'll let you correct anything I did wrong here. But I was just going off the starting salaries, or I might have been completely off here, because what I found was the two-year salary for 2018 guys, and I think I assumed that it was split half and half each year, but I just realized they probably get a raise after that second year. So I'm already pretty much dooming myself, but what I came up with was that basically the hypothetical trade to get two first rounders for the number two pick in the draft would have to be from Atlanta, because they're the only team that have like two like high quality first rounders. Like Boston has three, but they're kind of mid to late first round, while Atlanta has 5 and 9. So if the Hawks hypothetically wanted to trade 5 and 9 for two, it would cost the Knicks by my
one. Yeah, so I looked into it, and this is kind of rough numbers, because so basically the way that the NBA rookie salaries work is there's a scale that the guys get paid on. So, like, for example, this past season, the starting salary for the number two overall pick was $6.08 million, or basically $6.09. But the way that rookie salaries work is players can negotiate anywhere from 80% to 120% of that number. And especially with top picks, because you just kind of want to get them signed and get them into camp, I think that teams generally will pay that higher number, the 120%. So I did a little bit of rough calculation. The cap is going to go up presumably from $102 million to about $109 million this year. So I figured that for like roughly 7% increase. So I increased the salary from this past season by 7%, and then increase that by 20% to make it the 120% number. So these numbers may not be perfect, but I think they're pretty close. The second pick should start with a salary of $7.7 million going into next season. And then, like you said, if the Knicks would try to trade with Atlanta, they would have $5.73 million and $4.75 million with the fifth and ninth pick. Because if everything holds and they keep their fifth pick and Dallas lands at number nine and has to convey to Atlanta, those would be their two picks. And so that would equal $10.48 million. So actually, like, the most attractive team that could potentially trade with the Knicks in this scenario and give them two shots in this sort of unsure, 4 through whatever range, But, you know, you could argue that even picks 2 and 3 really aren't a sure thing, whether you prefer Barrett or John Morant. You know, as we've noticed with our talking with John Wasserman and Ricky O'Donnell these past couple weeks, you know, it's kind of a crapshoot after Zion. It, you know, even if you consider Morant and Barrett to be kind of a little bit higher than the rest of the guys. But, yeah, basically, like, if the Knicks would make that trade, it wouldn't help them too much. You can get into other options then, too. Like, there's Boston has potentially up to 4 first-round picks this year, which is absurd for that team. Like, they would probably want to package those for something. And, you know, maybe moving up would be the move for them. But that Memphis would have to fall back at least one slot to make that happen, because Memphis' pick is protected 1 through 8. And then they have, I think, the Clippers, the Kings, and their own pick, which are all range from like 14 through, I forget what the Celtics' own pick is, but it's like in the 20s. So, yeah, those are kind of the options. But it, all in all, like in general, you're probably not going to save too much cap room by trading back. So that's not really the avenue to get there.
Yeah, just from like a pure like draft perspective in terms of value, like I'd be pretty interested in doing something like 5 for 9 for 2, especially like when I'm of the opinion that Morant is clearly the second best prospect and the Knicks might not have much of a need for him. Like I'd almost rather like end up with like Bol Bol and Darius Garland, or like not necessarily those two guys, but like two people in that mold, like another point guard that like, I mean, theoretically like has a pretty solid chance of being as good as Morant, and then like just one more swing on a high upside guy. I find that a little more appealing than just how indefinite everything else is. I mean, it'd be a little bit of a different story if the Knicks had a very obvious need for point guard and you valued Morant that highly, but I don't know. I think it's kind of an intriguing debate, and I wonder if it. I mean, it would take the whole issue with that is it would require Atlanta being super interested in someone at 2, and I don't really know who they would be because they obviously don't need a point guard, and RJ Barrett like isn't really a great fit for them. So there's a lot in play there, but just hypothetically, I think it'd be interesting for the Knicks.
Yeah, it kind of sucks because this is sort of like, it's so funny that this year is the year the Knicks finally tanked and like nothing is like correct in the, you know, in draft land for them, so to speak. Like in previous years, you could have easily, like if you got a high pick like this and Boston was interested in somebody, Boston had a treasure trove of picks like for years and years and years. And go figure, this is like the final year for Boston's treasure trove of picks. Like they're out of extra first round picks after this year. They have none outgoing themselves, so they have all their own picks, but this is where everything finally comes to a head with all those extra ones, unless the Memphis one doesn't convey, in which case that'll probably convey next year, potentially. But like, if the Memphis one conveys as like the 9th pick, for example, all of Boston's draft capital is tied up in this year, instead of in the past where you could have potentially gotten them for something else. Same thing kind of goes for the Sixers. The Sixers are now at the point where they have they get to keep their own pick basically this year because the Sacramento one's going to go to Boston. And then they have a 2020 from Oklahoma City, which I guess could be a good thing. But other than that, they don't really have like a treasure trove anymore either. So like these two teams that were the, you know, the like lock boxes of draft picks for so many years are finally kind of running dry as teams have finally smartened up a little bit. So it's just kind of a bad year in general to be in this spot for the Knicks, I think, if they don't get the first pick, obviously. Like if you get the first pick, it's the perfect year to be in this spot. But if they get anywhere outside of the first, it's going to be hard to like pull a trigger on, you know, one of these other potential trades, because you essentially have to be trading for draft picks in the here and now, and you can't really get too much, you know, in future draft capital, which is kind of a pain in the butt. Of course, we'll talk about kind of the opposite of that situation when we get into the final segment of this pod. But yeah, it's just an interesting kind of predicament that they're in this year, I think.
Yeah, no, I'm in total agreement with you, and we've said as much quite often on this podcast. We'll take a break. We will come back and get into what a team of 15 Mitchell Robinsons would look like and whether or not that team would be more aesthetically pleasing than they are effective on the court. And then we get into a voicemail question from former guest on this podcast, Neil Yerumian, whose name I might have forgot how to pronounce. I don't know. I'm sure he'll let us know because he listens to every episode because Neil's great. And he wants to know what it would cost to move up to get Zion Williamson if the Knicks do not end up with the number one pick. We'll get into that next on Locked On Knicks.
Welcome back to Locked On Knicks. I am Alex Wolf. He is Gavin Shaw. We hope that you guys are listening to us on Himalaya, the premium podcast app for listening to podcasts, curating a great feed. They have a feature that lets you fall asleep to our beautiful, beautiful Knicks talking voices. All kinds of good stuff on the Himalaya app, so definitely check that out. So we are going to get back into the mailbag. Our next question comes to us from Ted, a.k.a. at Vive Le Frank, which is a big supporter of ours on Twitter, so shouts to you, Ted, and I believe on Posting and Toasting as well. We have a commenter named Viva La Frank. I can only assume it's the same person. That might be assuming a lot. Who knows, though? At any rate, Ted's question is, how many games in a season would a team of 15 Mitchell Robinsons win? I found this one to be pretty intriguing, Gavin. I think you're a little lower on it than I am, but then again, you know, I was talking recently about preseason predictions, and I think I predicted the Knicks to win like 32 games or something, so what the fuck do I know? Because clearly it's not in my wheelhouse to be predicting games like this. But I think this team could win 12 games, and that's probably being generous. But my thought is that, like, as much as Mitch in his current role on the current team isn't much of a ball handler and, you know, can't really shoot and things of that nature, like, this team of 15 Mitchell Robinsons, some of them would have to take the initiative and, like, learn to be a point guard and learn to be, like, you know, a shooting guard and a small forward and all that other good stuff. And they'd have to at least give it a shot. And with how quick Mitch learns things that we saw this year, I would feel pretty good in saying that they could a lot of those wins would probably come towards the end of the season because they would probably go like 0-30 to start the season. But I think Mitch could figure it out and win like 10 to 12 games by the end of the year just by, like, you know, his general dedication to the craft and ability to get better. Plus, like, five Mitchell Robinsons on defense with how well he defends the perimeter would be a freaking menace. Like, you'd probably see some, like, all-time low full game scores from these teams if there was five Mitchell Robinsons out there.
Yeah, I'm a little less optimistic than you. I wrote like five games maybe, and the defense would be insane. Like, it would, you could make a case that it would be the best defense in NBA history just because the help would be so good. Like, I think point guards would be able to break him down off the dribble a little bit, but the whole thing with that is, like, even if you get separation against him and you do like a step back, like, he blocks these guys. Like, he was one of the few dudes who actually, like, got Harden like a couple of times this year. And I think he was like, what was it? He had 17 more block shots on jumpers than anyone else in the league, even though he barely played the first half of the season. Like, I don't know how you would score with any kind of consistency against him. But my counter argument to that is like, I think, like, you would be able to get like a lot of good stuff off the dribble with like him guarding like top notch point guards. If he's guarding Damian Lillard for a full game, like, that's an issue, and you can help on that and he can recover. But I think point guards would eventually get like over the course of an offense, if you just kept moving and passing, like, I think you'd be able to beat him and get some threes. And then I just don't think he'd really be able to score like much at all on the other end, because like teams would really just like clog the paint and like play super aggressive zones, and he'd have to become like a infinitely better three-point shooter than he is, and like the passing and ball handling just wouldn't be there. So I think an NBA defense would hold a team of five Mitches to like maybe like 30 or 40 points a game. Like, I think he'd do a lot of his scoring like in transition. I don't think they could score enough. So I wrote that he'd win like five games. Like, there'd be some nights where the defense was just so good, maybe they overwhelm someone, but that even feels like a little high to me. Like, I'm not sure how he would fare against an NBA team.
Yeah, you probably just sold me on less, but damn it, I'm going to hold on to my optimism and just hope they could win 12. But they're still, no matter what, they're setting a record for futility for the Knicks, and that's a fact. There's no way they would win 17 or more games. So our second question, and I'm glad you sort of kept this one under wraps in the previews here, because I want some raw reactions to this one. From Scott McGill at McGill256 on Twitter. We got, are you guys rooting for Enes Kanter to do well in the playoffs, or do you, on the low, want him to get exposed on defense for no good reason? I, on the high, want him to get exposed on defense for no good reason, because screw that guy. I have no interest in rooting for him, especially after, like, you know, Portland's playing well, and he, to his credit, has been playing better on defense than I thought was actually possible. But that's kind of just more of a slap in the face to Knicks fans, because he never showed any of that on this team. And, you know, basically he seemed only concerned with getting his own shot and stealing rebounds from people when he was a Knick. So I don't really have any interest in seeing him succeed. Plus he's still pulling the petty bullshit of like after, I think it was after the first game where he made that comment of like, yeah, I was on a team where they said I was too old, and now look at me, I'm starting on a playoff team. And it's like, yeah, you're starting on a playoff team because the guy ahead of you got hurt, and you're the closest thing that they can do to replace him in Nurkic. And then he tweeted, like, some picture that was like, defense is key. And I'm like, you're a fucking clown. No, fuck him. I don't want him to do well. I want him to flame out, and now I feel bad because I like rooting for the Blazers, but by proxy, he's almost enough by himself to make me want the Blazers to flame out too, because he's just a jerk face. I don't like him. I think he's a clown.
Yeah, you almost convinced me, but I'm so apathetic towards him. Like I have no meaningful feeling. Like if he does well, like great. I think it's like a little funny when he does well. Like the one aspect of it that I like is there was like that famous clip when he was on the Thunder of Billy Donovan like getting caught on camera saying like we can't play Kanter during the playoffs. So I like the idea of Kanter dominating him a little bit. Not that like I have any particular dislike for Billy Donovan. I just think that's kind of enjoyable. Yeah, I don't know. No strong feelings on this one. He could do well. He could do badly. Doesn't affect my day to day. All right. Unless you've accounted to that, Alex, or you want to wrap this one up and get into our final voicemail question from Neil.
My counter is Enes Kanter sucks, and I want him to lose. And that's my final statement on the matter.
Perfect.
Yeah, so we can move on. We'll take a quick break, and then we have a voicemail question for you guys from former Fan Friday participant Neil Yerumian. So we'll get to that in just a moment.
What up? This is Neil, the one and only Knicks fan from Maine. All right, question for you guys. If the Knicks fall from number one in the draft, I would like to hear who you think the Knicks would have to give up, if it's even possible, to trade up to get Zion. Now, if we fall to 2, 3, 4, 5, let's hear your trade packages. Thank you very much. Bye.
All right, great question, Neil. So he wants to know what it would cost to move from wherever the Knicks end up, assuming it's outside of number one, so 2, 3, 4, or 5, back up to number one to get Zion Williamson. And it's an intriguing one, because I think for the vast majority of teams ending up at number one, they would not be willing to trade for the Knicks, because Zion is just so much clearly more valuable than anyone in this draft. And if you want to include Mitchell Robinson, then it gets kind of interesting. But I think even then it would be tough to convince a team to give up on a generational prospect. But Alex, as you noted to me pre-show, there is one team that has come out. And I think today there was a report from NBC saying that they would ultimately take Zion number one, but it didn't seem like they seemed to very much like Ja Morant too.
Yeah, so I'll get to that mystery team, which maybe by process of elimination, people would just figure it out in a second. But I'll just break down like the other teams around the Knicks real quick. So there's Cleveland. If Cleveland ends up with number one, there's no way they're not taking Zion, because it would take – you'd have to move heaven and earth and trade them like a legit young superstar and like 6 draft picks to make that happen, because they wouldn't be enamored by Ja Morant at all. Because they already have Sexton, and, you know, they don't want to give up on him after 1 year, and they're just so talent deprived that like they can't afford to move back in this draft, I don't think, if they have a chance at a guy who's potentially generational like that. So that's one. Chicago, maybe you could argue could be tempted by Morant, I guess, because their like point guard situation is more in flux than most teams, but I feel like you'd have a hard time swaying them on Zion as well, even if it's not a perfectly ideal fit with Wendell Carter and Lauri Markkanen already there. But still, I don't think they'd necessarily do it. And then Atlanta, you know, obviously, again, I feel like most teams, you know, the only possible way you could probably do this as the Knicks is to move from 2 to 1. And Atlanta's not going to do it for Ja Morant because they already have Trae Young, who's obviously like a Rookie of the Year candidate. And then Washington, you could maybe talk into it. But they have John Wall, obviously, who's hurt, but, you know, still they're paying him a huge amount of money. So I would assume that they would probably ideally want to see a John Wall, Zion Williamson pairing, not next year, but the year after once Wall is all healthy. So the only team that I think would truly make sense here is if Phoenix moves up to number one, because they are so, so desperate for a point guard, and they have been for years. But no more than this past year. I think I saw a stat that I think it was RPM, from ESPN, that stat, Real Plus Minus, they had like out of 90 available point guards, their top placing one was like 80 or something like that. And it was insane. It was just a terrible, terrible stat for them at the point guard position. So I think there's a chance and you know, I'd be interested to hear what you think, Gavin, but I think there's a shot. Only if the Knicks are at number two, that maybe they can entice them with some package of the number two pick plus probably both of the Dallas picks that they got in the Porzingis trade, the 2021 and the 2023 protected pick. And then they probably still also have to give up, like, I don't know, like Kevin Knox or something. I don't think you'd have – they wouldn't really want Mitchell Robinson, I wouldn't think, because they have Ayton already. But, you know, they could potentially use Kevin Knox even if they re-sign Kelly Oubre, just because Knox can potentially be, you know, kind of versatile player for them. But, yeah, I think that's probably the only feasible scenario where the Knicks land outside of the number one pick and could potentially trade back up. And it's very specific because I don't think that if they were at 3 or 4 – or especially 5, I don't even think Phoenix would deal with them because they'd be too afraid of losing out on Morant at 2. And that would be the guy that they would – the only guy they'd be okay with taking instead of Zion.
Right. Well, I think, first of all, with James Jones now officially the general manager in Phoenix, all the Knicks would have to do is trade for LeBron, and then he would just give them the number one pick. So it's really – it's that simple. But, yeah, I don't know. I think you're right and incorrect in assessing why Phoenix is the only team that, like – would even like blink based on the reporting that we've heard about taking Zion versus Morant. And especially with all like the general dysfunction there, it would sort of make sense for them to like do a trade. And like for like James Jones, it'd be like an opportunity to be like, which I mean, I think most people would say that he's overthinking it, but to be like, okay, we want a Morant anyways, and we're picking up all these assets for him. And as you put it, like the Knicks could like make it relatively enticing by adding all those pieces. If I was Phoenix, I would think that was crazy, and I would just take Zion and sign up for a team that's built around Devin Booker, Zion, Mikal Bridges, and Ayton for the next 12 to 15 years. That sounds like a whole lot of fun and a team that's going to win a lot of playoff games. But, yeah, I think that is a somewhat plausible scenario. And I wonder, it's going to be interesting if it does. Obviously, like, the odds are just because multiple things have to happen. Like, the odds are against, like, that specific pairing, but if it does come into play, like I'm going to be intrigued to see, like, if it's going to be really satisfying for us and for Neil if we actually get to see those talks happen and maybe they work something out.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly hope we don't even get in a situation where those talks have to happen, but you know, if the Knicks were at number two, the only team that I would be like, okay, maybe there's a shot for this to happen would be Phoenix. So I actually In my own twisted way, I almost would hope that if anybody jumps the Knicks, it wouldn't be Phoenix, because if Phoenix was sitting at number one and the Knicks at number two, I would, for weeks leading up to that, I would have myself convinced that the Knicks could somehow make a trade and make it happen and kind of bank on the Suns being stupid. But, yeah, there's no more Ryan McDonough there anymore. So, you know, I feel like – and maybe James Jones won't be the most brilliant dude ever. Who knows? But – I don't quite feel confident enough yet to say that he would be, you know, stupid enough to pass on Zion, who I feel like anybody with a set of eyeballs can tell you is going to be, you know, probably the best prospect out of this draft.
And Ryan McDonough had goat shit in his office, so I think we have to lay off him a little.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, yeah, there's only, he definitely deserves some pity just for that one. But I mean, it is what it is. I guess I kind of go nuts too.
Yeah. All right. Anyways, with that, I think we can wrap up this edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. And remember to tune in tomorrow.